cleanse thou me from secret faults. Psalm 19, verse 12. Secret sins. A sermon by Charles Spurgeon. Self-righteousness arises partly from pride, but mainly from ignorance of God's law. It is because men know little or nothing concerning the terrible character of the divine law that they foolishly imagine themselves to be righteous. They are not aware of the deep spirituality and the stern severity of the moral law, or they would have other and wiser notions. Once let them know how strictly the law deals with the thoughts, how it brings itself to bear upon every emotion of the inner man, and there is not one creature beneath God's heaven who would dare to think himself righteous in God's sight in virtue of his own deeds and thoughts. Only let the law be revealed to a man. Let him know how strict the law is, and how infinitely just, and his self-righteousness will shrivel into nothing. It will become a filthy rag in his sight, whereas before he thought it to be a goodly garment. Now David, having seen God's law, and having praised it in this psalm, which I have read in your hearing, is brought, by reflecting on its excellency, to utter this thought, "Who can understand his errors?" And then to offer this prayer, "Cleanse thou me from secret faults." In a Lateran council of the Church of Rome, a decree was passed that every true believer must confess his sins, all of them, once a year to the priest, and they affixed it, this declaration, that there is no hope of pardon but in complying with that decree. What can equal the absurdity of such a decree as that? Do they suppose that they can tell their sins as easily as they can count their fingers? Why, if we could receive pardon for all of our sins by telling everyone we have committed in 1 hour, there is not one of us who would be able to enter heaven, since, besides the sins that are known to us, and that we may be able to confess, are a vast mass of sins which are truly sins of those which we do not observe, but which are secret and come not beneath our eye. Oh, if we had eyes like those of God, we should think very differently of ourselves. The sins that we see and confess are but like the farmer's small samples which he brings to market when he has left his granary full at home. We have but a very few sins which we can observe and detect, compared with those which are hidden to ourselves and unseen by our fellow creatures. I don't doubt it is true of all of us who are here, that in every hour of our existence in which we are active, we commit tens of thousands of unholinesses, for which conscience has never reproved us, because we have never seen them to be wrong, and we have not studied God's laws as we ought to have done. Now, be it known to us, all that sin is sin, whether we see it or not, that a sin secret to us is a sin as truly as if we knew it to be a sin, though not so great a sin in the sight of God, as if it had been committed presumptuously, seeing that it lacks the aggravation of willfulness. Let all of us who know our sins offer this prayer after all of our confessions. Lord, I have confessed as many as I know, but I must add an etc. after them, and say, "Cleanse me from secret faults." That, however, will not be the pith of my sermon this morning. I'm going after a certain class of men who have sins not unknown to themselves, but secret to their fellow creatures. Every now and then we turn up a fair stone which lies upon the green sward of the professing church, surrounded with a verdure of apparent goodness, and to our astonishment we find beneath it all kinds of filthy insects and loathsome reptiles, and in our disgust at such hypocrisy we are driven to exclaim, "All men are liars. There are none of them whom we can put any trust at all." It is not fair to say so of all, but really, the discoveries which are made of the insincerity of our fellow creatures are enough to make us despise our kind, because they can go so far in appearances, and yet have so little soundness of heart. To you, sirs, who sin secretly, and yet make a profession, you break God's covenants in the dark, and wear a mask of goodness in the light. To you, sirs, who shut the doors and commit wickedness in secret, to you I shall speak this morning. Oh, may God also be pleased to speak to you, and make you pray this prayer, Cleanse thou me from secret faults. I shall endeavor to urge upon all pretenders present to give up, to renounce, to detest, to hate, to abhor all their secret sins. First, I shall endeavor to show the folly of secret sins. Secondly, the misery of secret sins. Thirdly, the guilt of secret sins. Fourthly, the danger of secret sins. And then I shall try to apply some words by way of remedy, that we may all of us be enabled to avoid secret sins. First, then, the folly of secret sins. Pretender, thou art fair to look upon. Thy conduct outwardly, upright, amiable, liberal, generous, and Christian. But do you indulge in some sin which the eye of man has not yet detected? Perhaps it is private drunkenness. You revile the drunkard when you stagger through the street, but you can yourself indulge in the same habit in private. It may be some other lust or vice. It is not for me just now to mention what it is. But pretender, we say to you, you are a fool to think of harboring a secret sin, and you are a fool for this one reason, that your sin is not a secret sin. It is known, and shall one day be revealed, perhaps very soon. Your sin is not a secret. The eye of God has seen it. You have sinned before his face. You have shut to the door and drawn the curtains, and kept out the eye of the sun. But God's eye pierceth through the darkness. The brick walls which surrounded you were as transparent as glass to the eye of the Almighty. The darkness which did gird you was as bright as the summer's noon to the eye of him who beholds all things. Don't you know, O man, that all things are naked and open to the eyes of him with whom we have to do? As a priest ran his knife into the entrails of his victim, discovered the heart and liver, and what else did lie within, so are you, O man, seen by God, cut open by the Almighty. You have no secret chamber where you can hide yourself. You have no dark cellar where you can conceal your soul. Dig deep, yea, deep as hell, but you cannot find earth enough upon the globe to cover your sin. If you should heap the mounds on his grave, those mounds would tell the tale of what was buried in their bowels. If you could cast your sin into the sea, 1,000 babbling waves could tell the secret out. There is no hiding it from God. Your sin is photographed in high heaven. The deed when it was done was photographed upon the sky, and there it shall remain, and you shall see yourself one day revealed to the gazing eyes of all men, a hypocrite, a pretender, who did sin in fancied secret, observed in all your acts by the all-seeing Jehovah. Oh, what fools men are to think they can do anything in secret. This world is like the glass eyes wherein bees sometimes work. We look down upon them and we see all the operations of the little creatures. So God looks down and sees all. Our eyes are weak. We cannot look through the darkness, but his eye, like an orb of fire, penetrates the blackness and reads the thoughts of man, and sees his acts when he thinks himself most concealed. Oh, it were a thought enough to curb us from all sin, if it were truly applied to us. Yet thou, God, seest me. Stop, thief. Drop thou that which thou hast taken to yourself. God sees you. No eye of detection on earth has discovered you, but God's eyes are now looking through the clouds upon you. Swearer, scarce any for whom you cared heard your oath, but God heard it. It entered into the ears of the Lord God of Sabaoth. Ah, you, who lead a filthy life, and yet are a respectable merchant bearing among men a fair and goodly character, your vices are all known, written in God's book. He keeps a diary of all your acts. And what will you think on that day when a crowd shall be assembled, compared with which this immense multitude is but a drop of a bucket? And God shall read out the story of your secret life, and men and angels shall hear it. Certain I am, there are none of us who would like to have all of our secrets read, especially our secret thoughts. If I should select out of this congregation the most holy man, should bring him forward and say, "Now, sir, I know all your thoughts, and I'm about to tell them." I am sure he would offer me the largest bribe that he could gather, if I would be pleased to conceal at least some of them. "Tell," he would say, "of my acts. Of them I am not ashamed, but do not tell my thoughts and imaginations. Of them I must ever stand ashamed before God." What then, sinner, will be your shame when your privy lusts, your closet transgressions, your secret crimes shall be gazetted from God's throne, published by his own mouth, and with a voice louder than a thousand thunders preached in the ears of an assembled world? What will be your terror and confusion then, when all the deeds that you have done shall be published in the face of the sun, in the ears of all mankind? Or renounce your foolish hope of secrecy, for your sin is this day recorded, and shall one day be advertised upon the walls of heaven. But in the second place, let us notice the misery of secret sins. If all sinners, a man who makes a profession of religion and yet lives in iniquity is a most miserable, a downright wicked man who takes a glass in his hand and says, "I'm a drunkard, I'm not ashamed of it," he shall be unutterably miserable in worlds to come. But brief though it be, he has his hour of pleasure. A man who curses and swears and says, "That is my habit, I'm a profane man," and makes a profession of it, he has at least some peace in his soul. But a man who walks with God's minister, who is united with God's church, who comes out before God's people and unites with them, and then lives in sin, what a miserable existence he must have of it. Why, he has a wrong existence in the mouse that is in the parlor, running out now and then to pick up the crumbs and then back again to his hole. Such men must run out now and then to sin, and oh, how fearful they are to be discovered. One day, perhaps, their character turns up. With wonderful cunning, they manage to conceal and gloss it over. But the next day, something else comes, and they live in constant fear, telling lie after lie to make the last lie appear truthful, adding deception to deception in order that they may not be discovered. Oh, 'tis a tangled web we weave when once we venture to deceive. If I must be a wicked man, give me the life of a roistering sinner who sins before the face of day. But if I must sin, let me not act as a hypocrite and a coward. Let me not profess to be God's and spend my life for the devil. That way of cheating the devil is a thing which every honest sinner will be ashamed of. He will say, "Now if I do serve my master, I will serve him out and out. I will have no sham about it. If I make a profession, I will carry it out. But if I do not, if I live in sin, I'm not going to gloss it over by cant and hypocrisy." One thing which has hamstringed the church and cut her very sinews in twain has been this most damnable hypocrisy. Oh, in how many places have we men whom you might praise to the very skies if you could believe their words, but whom you might cast into the nethermost pit if you could see their secret actions? God forgive any of you who are so acting. I'd almost said, I can scarce forgive you. I can forgive the man who riots openly and makes no profession of being better, but the man who fawns and cants and pretends and prays and then lives in sin, that man I hate. I cannot bear him. I abhor him from my very soul. If he will turn from his ways, I will love him, but in his hypocrisy is to me the most loathsome of all creatures. 'Tis said the toad doth wear a jewel in her head, but this man has none, but bears filthiness about him while he pretends to be in love with righteousness. A mere profession, my hearers, is but painted pageantry to go to hell in. It is like the plumes upon the hearse and the trappings upon the black horses, which drag men to their graves, the funeral array of dead souls. Take heed above everything of a waxen profession that will not stand the sun. Take care of a life that needs to have two faces to carry it out. Be one thing or else the other. If you make up your mind to serve Satan, do not pretend to serve God. And if you serve God, serve him with... No man can serve two masters. Do not try it. Do not endeavor to do it, for no life will be more miserable than that. Above all, beware of committing acts which it will be necessary to conceal. Guilt is a grim chamberlain, even when his fingers are not bloody red. Sacred sins bring fevered eyes and sleepless nights until men burn out their consciences and become in very deed ripe for the pit. Hypocrisy is a hard game to play at, for it is one deceiver against many observers, and for certain it is a miserable trade, which will earn at last, as a certain climax, a tremendous bankruptcy. Ah, you have sinned without discovery. Be sure your sin will find you out. And bethink you, it may find you out ere long. Sin, like murder, will come out. Men will even tell tales about themselves in their dreams. God has sometimes made men so pricked in their consciences that they have been obliged to stand forth and confess the story. Secret sinner, if you want the foretaste of damnation upon earth, continue in your secret sins, for no man is more miserable than he who sins secretly and yet tries to preserve a character. Yon stag, followed by the hungry hounds with open mouths, is far more happy than a man who is followed by his sins. Yon bird, taken in a fowler's net and laboring to escape, is far more happy than he who has weaved around himself a web of deception and labors to escape from it day by making the toils more thick and the web more strong. Oh, the misery of secret sins! Truly one may pray, cleanse thou me from secret faults. But now next, the guilt, the solemn guilt of secret sin. Now, John, you do not think there is any evil in a thing unless somebody sees it, do you? You feel that it is a very great sin if your master finds you out and robbing the till, but there is no sin if he should not discover it. None at all. And you, sir, you fancy it to be very great sin to play a trick in trade, in case he should be discovered and brought before the court. But to play a trick and never be discovered, that is all fair. Do not say a word about it, Mr. Spurgeon. It is all business. You must not touch business. Tricks that are not discovered, of course, you are not to find fault with them. The common measure of sin is the notoriety of it. But I do not believe in that. A sin is a sin, whether done in private or before the wide world. It is singular how men will measure guilt. A railway servant puts up a wrong signal. There is an accident. The man is tried and severely reprimanded. The day before he put up the wrong signal, but there was no accident, and therefore no one accused him for his neglect. But it was just the same, accident or no accident. The accident did not make the guilt. It was the deed which made the guilt, not the notoriety, nor yet the consequences of it. It was his business to have taken care, and he was as guilty the first time as he was the second, for he negligently exposed the lives of men. Do not measure sin by what other people say of it, but measure sin by what God says of it, and what your own conscience says of it. Now, I hold the secret sin, if anything, is the worst of sin, because secret sin implies that the man who commits it has atheism in his heart. You will ask, how can that be? I reply, he may be a professing Christian, but I shall tell him to his face that he is a practical atheist. If he labors to keep up a respectable profession before man, and then secretly transgresses, why is he not an atheist who will say there is a God, yet at the same time thinks more of man than he does of God? Is it not the very essence of atheism? Is it not a denial of the divinity of the Most High when men lightly esteem him and think more of the eye of a creature than of the observation of their Creator? There are some who would not for the life of them say a wicked word in the presence of their minister, but they can do it knowing God is looking at them. They are atheists. There are some who would not trick and trade for all the world if they thought they would be discovered, but they could do it while God is with them. That is, they think more of the eye of man than the eye of God. They think it worse to be condemned by man than to be condemned by God. Call it by what name you will, the proper name of that is practical atheism. It is dishonoring God. It is dethroning him, putting him down below his own creatures. And what is that but to take away his divinity? Brethren, do not, I beseech you, incur the fearful guilt of secret sins. No man can sin a little in secret. It will certainly engender more sin. No man can be a hypocrite and yet be moderate in guilt. He will go from bad to worse and still proceed until when his guilt shall be published, he shall be found to be the very worst and most hardened of men. Take heed of the guilt of secret sin. Ah, now, if I could preach as Roland Hill did, I would make some people look to themselves at home and tremble too. It is said that when he preached, there was not a man in the window or standing in a crowd or perched up anywhere but said, "There he is preaching at me." he is telling me about my secret sins. And when he proclaimed God's omniscience, it is said men would almost think they saw God bodily present in the midst of them, looking at them. And when he had done his sermon, they would hear a voice in their ears. Can any hide himself in secret places that I cannot see him, saith the Lord? Do not I fill heaven and earth, saith the Lord? I would I could do that, that I could make every man look to himself and find out his secret sin. Come, my hearer, what is it? Bring it forth to the daylight. Perhaps it will die in the light of the sun. These things love not to be discovered. Tell your own conscience now what it is. Look it in the face, confess it before God, and may he give you grace to remove that sin and every other, and turn to him with full purpose of heart. But this know, that your guilt is guilt discovered or undiscovered. And if there be any difference, it is worse, because it has been secret. God save us from the guilt of secret sin.